Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 95, Food Truths from Farm to Table. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I'm Roger, your host, and this is the podcast that's all about home cooking and getting in the kitchen and having more fun and learning new things, being confident and cooking up good food for family and friends. So thank you so much for being here today to listen in. This is a great, I'm so happy to have you. Today I've got a great episode lined up for you. I'm going to be talking with Michelle Payne of Cause Matters Corporation, and we have an interesting conversation about her new book, Food Truths from Farm to Table, 25 Surprising Ways to Shop and Eat Without Guilt. Before we get into that, though, I want to remind you, as always, if you'd like to get a hold of me, I'm always happy to read your emails if you send them over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. Of course, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/kitchencounterpodcast and on Twitter at @TKCpodcast. And if you poke around enough, you can find me on Instagram and probably even Pinterest, but I'm not over there too darn much. But if you send me an email or hit me up on Facebook, I'll definitely get your message and get back with you. Now, back to the topic of today's show. So if you remember a few episodes back in episode 91, I spoke with Leah McGrath, a registered dietitian, in an episode I titled Food Sanity. And Leah and I talked about things like labeling on food you find in the grocery store, how sometimes it can be misleading or not altogether honest. We talked about organic versus non-organic. We talked about GMOs. We've talked about quite a few different things. And I think you could approach this conversation with Michelle Payne as kind of a bookend to the conversation I had with Leah McGrath, because we do touch on some of the same types of things. We talk about labeling and things like that in the grocery store. But I think Michelle approaches this topic from a more of an agricultural mindset. So she is a farmer. She raises Holsteins, which you'll hear about in her introduction. She'll give a good bio of herself, so I won't take too much time doing that here. But one thing is certain when you hear Michelle speak, she's a passionate advocate for agriculture and educating consumers about agricultural practices and how that impacts the food choices that we make as consumers. And she also has some great information in the book about kind of getting over the guilt of food choices that we make. I recount to her, you know, kind of the feeling I get, and I know a lot of you do too, when you run into somebody you know in the grocery store, but you don't know that well, maybe a work acquaintance or, you know, your boss, you run into your boss at the grocery store and you're thinking as you're talking to them, oh man, what's in my cart? Not that there's anything bad in your cart, you know, but just sometimes we can feel guilty about we don't have the most nutritious, amazing ingredients in our cart. And we think people judge us because of that, when in reality, they're probably thinking the exact same thing. So we get into some conversation around that too. It was a great chat I had with Michelle. I was so glad she was able to join me. The show notes for this episode, where you can find links to her new book, Food Truths from Farm to Table, her website and some of her other information can be found at kitchencounterpodcast.com/95. That's just the number 95. Head there and you'll get all the show notes for this episode. So without further ado, I bring you Michelle Payne with Cause Matters Corporation. So Michelle Payne, thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
Well, thanks for having me, Roger.
I guess I should mention how we kind of crossed paths. I interviewed Leah McGrath a couple of weeks ago for my show. We kind of talked about food sanity in the supermarket, and she gave me your name as a great resource on kind of along similar lines. So I've checked out your new book, Food Truths from Farm to Table. Really cool. And I'm so glad we could have a chance to sit down and talk. So with that in mind, maybe could you just start out giving us a little bit of a background about yourself? Because in your book, you recount your kind of your origin story. I know you're a farm girl, but maybe tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. I am absolutely a farm girl through and through. I was born and raised on a farm in southern Michigan, and I have owned and bred registered Holsteins since the age of 9. And those beautiful ladies still grace my front yard today. They're the black and white variety, in case you don't know what a Holstein is. And I'm very proud that, to be a mom of a daughter who shares the same values. We are actually in crazy fair preparation mode, because she's taking some of those dairy cattle to the fair to show for 4-H. But my background does center around agriculture. And over the last 16 years, I've worked as a professional speaker and author with Cause Matters Corporation. And really what I try to focus on is being able to connect people around the food plate to have a more productive conversation. So, Roger, it's great. I appreciate you having me on here. Leah is wonderful, as are other dietitians who really have that rock solid education when it comes to nutrition, rather than just someone who hangs a shingle on and aims to be a nutritionist. So I'm glad that you had the chance to talk to her.
Yeah, she's fantastic. I've been following her on social media for a while, and I really appreciate what she's out there doing. So this is interesting. So your book that I mentioned a second ago, Food Truth from Farm to Table, and let me just mention too, for as you're listening to this, I will put all of this information in the show notes so you can go to my website and find it easily. But I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit about this book, because I know it's not your first book, but you know, what is the book about, and how did you come to write this particular book? And I should say, sure, the subtitle is 25 Surprising Ways to Shop and Eat Without Guilt. I love it.
Well, thanks. And it's always great to hear what people think as they go through Food Truth. So the book was written to be a guide around the grocery store. It's basically filled with the stories and science in a very approachable way, and 9 sections across the grocery. And so from milk all the way to the convenience aisle and everything in between, we talked about what the myths were, what the misinformation and what the marketing magic, as you called what I call bunkus, quite frankly, is about food. But so the book is structured to be a pretty approachable read, and it addresses everything from hormones to soil, to sustainability, to food waste, to genetics and sugar and salt and pecksniffery, and wide variety of topics. So basically, bottom line is remove guilt from the grocery store and help you reduce your confusion around buying and serving food for your family, so that hopefully we can all remember that food should be about celebration.
So that's a great summary. And that kind of, I guess, sums up your philosophy right there at the end. Food's about celebration, guilt-free, you know, don't feel bad about the choices you're trying to make in the grocery store to feed your family, because I guess what you're saying is at the end of the day, that marketing can mislead you and make you feel uneasy, where I don't want to say like everything's equal, but you should probably emphasize that marketing, the front of the package labels, a little less than I guess the product makers would have you. That probably didn't make any sense. But talk a little bit about this idea of food truths, because I know you've organized the book around these 25 food truths. And this book is amazing. It doesn't cover every aisle in the grocery store, but it covers darn near most of them that is of concern to us. You know, dairy, eggs, fruits, meats, all that kind of stuff. But what are the 25 food truths about? And maybe just give us a couple of examples so we know where you're coming from.
Sure. When I stepped back after my first book, which is called No More Food Fights, I realized that we needed to probably have a more concrete view of how food was raised and to address people's concerns around the grocery store. I know as a mom how important it is to buy the right food for my family and to feel good about those nutritional choices. And my research clearly showed that parents want to do the right thing for their family, they feel bad about food, and that really saddens me, because food is a basic sustenance. It's not a political statement. It should not be emotional. Now, I say that and I eat chocolate in vast quantities at certain times, but aside from that, you know, the emotions around food and the sensationalism is a bit sad, frankly. So what I did is I stepped back and I knew it was going to be organized by the aisles, and it does cover everything from the baking aisle to convenience to produce and such. And then I looked at what the issues were, and you can appreciate the process of going through and trying to hone in on the different issues. So one of the ones that surprises a lot of people is food tooth number 5, organic farming is about production methods, not nutritional value. In other words, just because a product is organic does not mean that it's more nutritional. And several dietitians, as well as numerous studies, back that up. It is a production style. It's the way that the food is raised. And another one that seems to surprise a lot of people is that the answer to food waste is hidden in your refrigerator. We throw away 40% of the food in this country. 1 in 5 people live in food insecurity. Those two statistics are rather sad, frankly. And so when you step back and you think about the opportunities that we can make on a personal basis, I mean, there's simple things we can do. Like, if you're not going to use your vegetables, freeze them. And Roger, I think you saw throughout the book as you read it, I admit to all of my food sins, if you will. I have a huge sweet tooth. My daughter and I eat Cheetos on spring break. We do all sorts of crazy things, but food is about tradition and celebration to us, and we balance that, and that's one of the basic philosophies that I share at the end of the book, is that it has to be about balance. And, you know, we exercise. She's a huge athlete. I make sure that I go work out, so it's really about trying to find that balancing act, And food tooth number 22 actually looks at the balancing act in a slightly different way. It's about choice on the farm and choice on the plate as a balancing act. So what that means is the people that are out there producing your food have a choice in how they are going to farm. And about 96-97% of farms in this country today are still family farms. They are family businesses. And so families have make a choice in how they're going to farm, just as everyone listening has a choice in how they're going to buy their food. So the food truths cover everything from very specific topics such as hormones and antibiotics to some of the larger global issues like food truth number 24. The media is not the best source of information about food.
Yeah, amen to that, right?
Or about anything, I might add, but I should probably say, I'm going to stick to what I know. What I tried to do was to address the bigger issues, but also address what I found in the research, because I kept having moms, I don't have time for this. I feel like I need a science degree when I go to the grocery store. And so my final food truth, it actually has its own chapter. It's the only food truth that has its own complete chapter dedicated to it, is that buying and eating the right food does not have to be time consuming.
Yeah. And there's a lot more food truths, obviously, than just the ones you mentioned. There's 25, and it's so great that you broke the book down in this way, because I think it's easy just to say, let's talk about milk, and then let's talk about poultry, and then let's talk about fruit. The thing is, all these food truths are so cross-cutting, it just applies to everything. So I love the way you've arranged it, but let's get into a few specific examples just for fun.
Sure.
And I know before we talked a little bit about, maybe let's talk about I know you have a special love for dairy, so maybe we can talk a little bit about dairy. And meat and poultry. So let's start with dairy. Give me an example of one of your food truths and how that relates to the dairy case.
Sure. So food truth number 1, I put it out there immediately. Hormones are in everything. Your kale has hormones in it. The maple syrup that you poured on your pancakes or your children's pancakes or waffles is hormone sap. And one of the challenges that we have, and I'm not trying to be terribly facetious here, but one of the challenges that we have is that a lot of folks don't understand the science of food. For example, Jason Lescott at Oklahoma State showed that 75% of our United States believe that their food should be labeled if it has DNA in it. It's a challenge. It's a huge challenge. So to talk about hormones and to talk about antibiotics and to talk about the issues in the dairy case and the meat case requires some level of understanding. So as well as chemicals, we haven't even gotten into that food truth, which is more about the produce aisle. But so one of the things that I address immediately out of the box, because I am obviously a dairy person and my entire career, I have been questioned about two things around milk. One is hormones and the second is antibiotics. And so food truth number two is that antibiotics do have benefits. One has a tendency to raise some eyebrows. But what I did was I shared stories throughout the book or throughout the dairy case about exactly what happens with hormones and went back to, I believe it was a 1945 definition of antibiotics and what they really do. And then if you're really hardcore science, you will be glad to know that the statistics are in there that show the very small percentage of human use, medically important human antibiotics that are used in animals. So in other words, farm animals are not causing all of the resistance issues solely. I think that that's a more complex discussion. But what's more important when you look at antibiotics is the fact that it's against the law, and it has been against the law for antibiotics to be in your milk. And so milk goes through testing when a cow is treated, which I probably should do a better job of explaining why you would ever give antibiotics to a cow. But if any of your listeners have ever had mastitis or had a friend with mastitis, you know it's extraordinarily painful. Well, if you take a 60-pound udder on a cow, it's even more painful, right?
I would imagine, yeah.
Yeah, and so for me, as a person who loves these animals, it's not in their best interest if I don't give them antibiotics. It's an animal welfare concern, quite frankly, because, I mean, there's swelling involved. There's pain involved. It's horrific. And so, yeah, when a cow has mastitis, we treat her with antibiotics, but that milk is held out from the food system. So when cows are milked with milking machines, you have the opportunity to put it in a separate system if they are treated cows. And there is a federally mandated withholding period that you do not put the milk in the system. And before you do put the milk back in the food system, you test it. Because here's the deal that a lot of folks that don't understand. If a dairy farmer does not test their milk before that cow's milk goes in the bulk tank and the milk is bad, in other words, it has a trace of antibiotics in it, that entire bulk tank has to be dumped. So basically, milk is tested at the cow level. It's tested at the bulk tank level with a huge tank that sits in the milk room. And then it's tested when it's loaded into the big semi-truck full of milk. If at any point that milk is carrying too high of a level of antibiotics in it, everything has to be dumped. So it costs thousands and thousands of dollars. So essentially, before the milk hits your glass, your cup, it's tested anywhere from 6 to 8 times.
So let's move over to the, let's talk about poultry for a second. And I mentioned we were chatting ahead of time that, you know, you see like the premium chicken, or probably all the chicken for that matter in the poultry case, you know, will say things like, I think it's no antibiotics, right? And they tout that and maybe they charge a little bit more. Is that, tell me a little bit about that. Is that a misconception? Does any chicken have antibiotics? I mean, I'm guessing based on what you just said about milk, the same is probably true for livestock.
Correct. So it's interesting. I know there's a lot of distrust in government today and large organizations, but FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, and USDA, the United States Department of Agriculture, are a check and balance system, and they are there for a reason. And so you cannot have large quantities of antibiotics in chicken by any stretch of the imagination. And one of the things that's very frustrating is that a lot of packages will say thing about, they used to say hormone-free, they've at least cracked down on that, but there are claims about that there's no hormones added. Well, it's been illegal to add hormones to chickens, and there isn't even a product that's out to give hormones to chicken or to turkey or any form of poultry. The labels in the poultry case are very interesting. And again, you know, one of the contributors to Food Truths from Farm to Table, because from farmers to ranchers to dietitians to food scientists to veterinarians contributed to the book. And the veterinarian, who is a specialty in poultry, shared some pretty prevalent animal welfare concerns about if turkeys and chickens are not treated with antibiotics when they're sick, what happens? Because the reality is these are small creatures that live in a confined space, right? So it's no different than a group of three-year-olds that get sick and stick their fingers up their nose, right? If one gets sick, they're all going to get sick. And by the way, humans can make animals sick. So that's something a lot of folks don't understand about why we keep our animals in biosecure spaces. It's not because we're trying to hide anything from the public on a farm, but it's because we don't want our animals to get sick.
Yeah. And I don't want to beat the label thing to death. But when Leah and I talked, it is funny. We kind of used the non-GMO certified as an example too, to use your words, the marketing bunkus. It's like, you know, cat litter that's non-GMO certified, or that's like, okay, we're getting a little ridiculous now. And it's unfortunate that people would pay more for their cat litter because they thought it was something applied to it that couldn't even possibly apply to it. Anyway.
Yes, I absolutely agree. And I always make a joke about antibiotic-free, gluten-free, hormone-free, chemical-free water that costs four times. We can joke about it, but unfortunately, people must be buying it or they wouldn't put the labels on it.
Clearly. So let me ask you a little bit about one of the other kind of concepts. And I think you have a whole section in your book devoted to it that I found interesting and resonated with me because it's something I talk about on my show. And it kind of goes, I guess, partly with the guilt-free shopping, but you do a good job in this section of balancing out, you know, making decisions. But this is your section on convenience, frozen food and canned foods and things like that. And one of the things you put in the book, I think a couple of times is, what's in your grocery cart, and I think you mentioned it earlier, is your business. I bet everybody listening to this has had the moment where you're shopping at the grocery store and you run into like a work acquaintance who you don't hang out with, you're not necessarily friends with, and they're shopping. And like, what's the first thing you do? Literally, you say hi and then you like scan each other's cart, right? You're like, oh, what are they buying? What do they have? And you're sitting there going like, oh my God, I wish I would have covered up that bag of Doritos with like the kale, the bag of kale, but it's sitting there wide open for everybody to see. You know what I mean? It's so irrational, but I do it myself and I don't even want to. Anyway, so tell me a little bit about your ideas around convenience food and talk a little bit about using canned and frozen foods.
Sure. Well, I will be the first to admit, Roger, that I was oblivious that people looked at each other's grocery carts because it's great. No, I mean, you're echoing exactly what some of my research showed. And, you know, some of my friends told me over a glass of wine one night, you know, I asked them what they thought about when they went to the grocery store. And one mom who is oblivious to a lot of social pressures, she tells me she worries that that people are going to judge her because her one son's overweight. So if she has any convenience food in there, you know, frozen pizza bites or whatever, that she's going to be judged. And another mom is worried that she's going to see CrossFit friends and they're going to judge her because she might have that bag of Doritos that you talked about. And to me, that's ridiculous. I mean, food is a personal choice. And one of the things that I really covered throughout the book is that if you know your four standards of ethical, nutrition, health, and I'm not getting them right, sorry, standards, environmental standards, that's the fourth one, then you can measure all claims against those. But when you don't know those standards, you start buying into the marketing. And dietitians reconfirm this for me, studies reconfirm this. There is nothing wrong with using frozen fruit and frozen vegetables and canned fruit and canned vegetables. If that's the way you need to cook, I mean, I cook for my family and you know what? I have a lot of balls in the air trying to juggle everything and I don't always have time to do it. Well, actually, I never have time to do a 5-course meal. So I'm sure like most people listening. And so it's about getting back to common sense and thinking through things critically. Why are frozen peas less nutritious than a fresh tomato? Because in fact, they are picked at the exact moment of ripeness, and the way that they are preserved, both in canning and in freezing, allows you to have the same, if not higher, nutritional value than those tomatoes that may sit and rot in your refrigerator and then contribute to food waste.
Yeah, so that's a great point.
Yeah, I would encourage people not to feel guilty if you do need to. I mean, I have a chest freezer downstairs that is stocked full of things because I live 20 minutes from my grocery store. I don't feel guilty about that. And there's a lot of concern about salt. And I understand that you do need to monitor your sodium. But as an example, food truth number 17 is that sugar and moderation are a natural part of a balanced diet. salt is required for us to live. That's the reality of it. And so as long as you're monitoring your sodium intake, canned foods are not all that bad. And every parent out there will appreciate this, or working grandparent, whatever you may fall into. There are times when you're going to have to purchase convenience foods. The world is not going to end. And you shouldn't worry if people are going to judge you, because you can balance that out with the salad the next day, because it's all about that nutritional balancing act.
Yeah, that's great. I really appreciate that sentiment. Like I said, I echo similar sentiments on my show from time to time. And I just think, I believe that, you know, people that get in the kitchen and cook for themselves and cook for them for their family, they're happier overall. They're generally healthier overall, physically and mentally. And anything that puts a barrier between people getting in their kitchen and cooking, like the example I used earlier, it's like, if you have to make macaroni and cheese out of a box, that's fine. You know, if you're not eating it every day, that's okay. These are things that get you in the kitchen and started. And, you know, someday you're going to take a crack at making macaroni and cheese from scratch, and it'll probably be fantastic, and you'll probably buy local cheese, you know. So it's just, you're right. Getting over this idea that your food choices are really anybody else's business when they're clearly not.
Absolutely. And again, it's about measuring them against your ethical, health, environmental, and social standards. Because if you have those clearly in line, you know, as an example, from a ethical standpoint, I'm not okay with animals not being treated when they need to be treated. Mm-hmm. But I know I have a very different perspective on that, because I have to go out and look my animals in the eye every day. You know, not everybody does that. So my hope is that this book will give people permission not only to feel good about their food, but to give pause and put a question mark up when they see the ridiculous label claims that are out there.
That's perfect. And I think that's a great place to probably start wrapping up, because I think we're about out of time. But I want to give you an opportunity to let everybody know where they can find you if they want, because you have a great website with a lot of interesting, good resources on there. So where can folks find you on the web and social media?
Sure. Well, you can find me on social media at M Payne Speaker. So it's MPAYNSPEAKER. And then my website is causematters.com. The book Food Truths from Farm to Table is available on Amazon and Walmart and Target. It actually hit number one on Amazon back in May. So I was very excited about that.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And my website does have as far as dietitian blogs, farm blogs, and whatnot. And what really my goal is to provide folks like your listeners with a resource where if they do have questions about how food is raised or what the right science is behind it, that they've got some places they can go to, because I know what it's like to not have the answers and to feel confused, and it's not very comforting.
Yeah, and on that note, I should mention too that your book is very well sourced. There's lots of footnotes and lots of additional opportunities for people to investigate your sources and you know, lead them down the path of, you know, making their own decisions as well. So thank you for that. So, Michelle, thank you so much for your time. I know you're busy, so I'll let you get back to your day of educating folks about the food truths from farm to table. And as I said, I will put a link to your book on Amazon in my show notes. So if anybody wants to check it out, you can find it there.
Excellent. Well, I hope to hear from your listeners. And thanks so much for having me, Roger.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Michelle Payne of Cause Matters Corporation. As I mentioned in the intro, she's very passionate about agriculture and educating consumers. And I think as you listen to that interview, that became pretty obvious, pretty clear that she is a great advocate for agriculture. So happy that Michelle was on the show. You should really go check out her website if you have questions or kind of want to do some research on your own. She has a gigantic section of resources on her webpage. Everything from agricultural blogs, scientists, dietitians, nutrition blogs, other food blogs. I mean, basically anything you'd want to use as a starting point to do some of your own research on these issues, you can find great information at her blog over at causematters.com. So I highly encourage you to go check it out. And if you like what you heard from Michelle, sign up for her email list so you can kind of stay up to date on the projects she's working on. So Michelle, thank you so much for being on the show. All right, folks, that does it for another episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Once again, so glad you were able to join me today. Again, you know, send an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com if you have any comments about this show or have any ideas for some upcoming episodes. I've got a lot of episodes in the pipeline right now, so there's going to be some really, really great stuff coming down the line. So head over to kitchencounterpodcast.com, sign up for the emails, or go over to iTunes and subscribe for free so you don't miss any upcoming episodes. All right, everybody, thanks again for listening. This is Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. And until next time, happy cooking.